everybody. It's Mike Jeffers, ChicagoJazz.com, Chicago Jazz Magazine, and welcome to Talkin' Jazz, the podcast that features local and international musicians that are coming through Chicago or have new releases or anything in between. And I am very excited to be joined by Wynard Harper. He's going to be coming in for some gigs at the Jazz Showcase April 18th through the 21st. And Wynard, I know it's not your first time into Chicago, so I'm looking forward to really talking to you about some of your influences, and maybe we can get a few stories about some of your past performances in Chicago. But it's a pleasure having you on the show, and I'm glad you're coming into town live and in person.
Hey, thanks much, man. It's going to be fun. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, so why don't we talk a little bit specifically about the show that's coming up at the Showcase first, and then I want to get into some of your background and some of your influences and stuff. But you've got a sextet coming in with you that weekend, and why don't we talk a little bit about who's in the band and what music people can expect to hear in, you know, that weekend at the Jazz Showcase?
Similar to the band I had before, you know, some of the guys are still intact,
mm-hmm.
And there's some new guys coming in. But Vince DuPont on bass, Ted Chubb on trumpet, Cleve Guyton on saxophone, Kevin Jones on percussion, Nick Masters on the piano, and Charlie Siegner at the guitar.
Wow, that's a you're going to have a full band there up on that stage.
Yeah. And then we expecting some guests, you know, mm-hmm. as well. So we got some surprises we're going to throw in.
So now let's talk a little bit, because I mean, listening to your playing, I'm assuming people can expect to hear probably some straight ahead stuff, obviously. But then you also you kind of veer in and out of different genres, which is great, because I mean you're kind of like a completely well-rounded, you know, drummer. You don't, to me, your sound is Wynard Harper. It's not like, oh, you sound like this guy, or you're just straight ahead, or you're just this. So, I mean, let's talk a little bit. What are people going to get to hear? Especially you're bringing a percussionist in, so I'm assuming that there's going to be another layer of rhythm happening on top of everything, which is pretty hip.
Yes, because, you know, jazz has always been a spiritual experience for me, you know, growing up. So I always try to keep that infused, you know, in our music. So, of course, there's always that African element that we like to bring to the music, and so it's you know, so good music, you know, we a lot of rhythms. We like to encourage people, you know, to dance. You know, music should move you.
Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, let's talk a little bit about your background, too, because I find it fascinating. I knew you were with Betty Carter for a long time and all that, but I didn't realize that you actually played with Dexter Gordon, too, when you first started out.
Yeah, that was one of my first gigs, Dexter Gordon and Johnny Griffin. So, yeah.
Oh, man. Did you tour with Dexter, or was that kind of like just around New York, or what was that like?
No, I met Dexter when I lived in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And that's I got the opportunity to sit in with him. At Blues Alley.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then, you know, some months later, while I was, you know, out and studying with Jackie McLean, I got the phone call to come out with Dexter. Yeah.
You know, that he's one of those sax players. And you tell me, as a drummer, I mean, I love listening to Dexter, and I love listening to those rhythm sections and stuff, because it just seems like he's just like a, you know, like he was a groove master. I mean, on that saxophone, the soloing and all that stuff, it was just so in the pocket. And it would go on forever. I mean, he could take like a 10-minute solo, and it wouldn't seem like a 10-minute solo. But what was that like?
It was always musical, mm-hmm. and moving. You know, like I said, and that's the way I grew up. You know, the kind of guys that I had the opportunity of working with and listening to. You know,
is that something that, like, consciously? So, like, when you were playing, like playing with Jackie McLean, playing with Johnny Griffin, playing with Dexter Gordon. I mean, those guys. Is that really where you started really honing your craft and kind of really learning how to groove and learning, getting that passion for that kind of music and that kind of groove based music? I mean, I'm talking about jazz, obviously, but I mean, you know, it's just, that stuff is so in the pocket. It's mind boggling even today to listen to it. So, I mean, that must have really influenced you when you were coming up.
Oh, of course. You know, growing up listening to, you know, Cannonball Adderley's band, mm-hmm. Art Blakey, you know, Lee Morgan, and then coming out and having the chance to work with people like, you know, Betty Carter and Ray Bryant, you know, with everybody you work with, you take a piece, you know, you take something, you take things that you learn, and that, you know, and that gets poured into your well, you know, so you know, you can develop and come up with an identity you know, for yourself. So, you know, I've always tried to do that. Take, you know, things that I liked, things that inspired me, things that touched me, and incorporate them into my sound. You know, Max Roach and Clifford Brown, you know, that was another big influence. But just, you know, and then too, you know, just the studying of the history, because that's a very, very important element to this music that sometimes a lot of people forget, is studying the history and the tradition, you know, of what people were playing for, you know, the element of praise and the spiritualism, the thinking of a brighter future, you know, that things will, you know, will get better, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's interesting, because I think it's really important, and I know you probably teach and do clinics and things like that, and it's almost like one of those things these days where I think a lot of students, you know, especially college-age kids that are maybe just coming out of college and stuff, that maybe went and got their jazz studies degree or something, they want to get into the originals. But how important was it for you to learn your playing and learn the standards and really learn where the music came from? And how did that help you? Because I know you have original music and stuff. I mean, how does that help you then move into your originals and move into different arrangements and perform other people's original music?
Well, the thing for me, it makes you solid. You know, you want to have a foundation. And you want to understand, you know, what you're playing for. Because I find a lot of people sometimes, even after, you know, being in it for years, you know, have to think about, okay, well, what am I playing for? You know. What is my intention? You know, so when you study the history, I think it helps you to, you know, sculpt that, you know, so that you have some meaningful music, dialogue, and even when it comes to doing originals, you know, you have something that's meaningful. It's not just, you know, just music for music's sake. Because that's never what jazz was or intended to be. It's just music for music's sake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's almost like, I mean, you got to build up your bass, obviously. And I remember... talked to Louis Belson, actually, and you know, he talked about how he knew he had a reason why he was playing everything he was playing, you know,
right,
no matter what he was doing. So it sounds like that's kind of where you're coming from too. I mean, no matter what you're doing, you have a reason for why you're doing it, whether it's you're playing off of somebody in the band, whether you're doing something else, whether as you're building your solo it's a melodic structure or something. I mean, but that comes from knowing that background. Is that kind of where you're coming from?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But then, you know, a lot of things that Max Roach, had, you know, would talk to me about, you know, is being, you know, one of the main things he used to say is being socially significant. And this music, this art form jazz is so powerful, you know, as Jimmy Heath and him tell me, it's one of the greatest forms of democracy that we're ever going to see. And so all of that comes into play, you know, when you learn about it and you think about it, you know, the community aspect of it, the social aspect of it, having trust between people you're playing with and respect, helping them have their say and them helping you have your say. You know, all that's democracy, but all that goes into this music, you know, and you learn all of that and you try to take all of that and apply it every time, you know, you sit down and play. And with the music that you play, you know, and, you know, what am I playing this for? What is this song saying? You know, what do I want to say? How can I help this to be said?
You know, when you were with Betty Carter, you know, obviously a vocal master and, you know, legend, how important was it for you to know the lyrics of all the tunes so that you knew what was happening? And then did that transfer into your music? Because I've always heard, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a vocalist or an instrumentalist. If you're playing tunes, you're playing with vocalists or whatever, you should know the lyrics so that you understand what the tune is about. And that changes the way you're playing.
Right. Well, it gives you the intent, you know, like I said, then you're not just sitting down playing music. You know, you're sitting down playing a song and maybe talking about pain and sorrow. You know, you have that understanding. Or you're talking about a song, you know, or you're playing a song, speaking and talking about love. You know, when you understand, you know, the topic, of course, then your conversation is going to, you know, to fit that.
How,
you know, you don't want to come in, you know, talking about baseball. You know, and the song is talking about, you know, lost in sorrow and death. You know what I mean? So it's just, you know, having that understanding, you know. So knowing the lyrics was always, but it was something she would stress, you know, because when she had guys playing behind her, she wanted to make sure that you were helping her to say what it was that she wanted to be said.
How did you end up getting that gig anyways with Betty Carter?
That's in a way, that's kind of a funny story, because when I lived in D.C., and I would go around, sit in, meet a lot of the musicians, and working a lot of the house bands, I would meet a lot of the guys from New York.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that happened that really stood out to me, I met Rufus Reed early on. And I remember he told me something. He said, well, listen, before you come to New York, make sure that, you know, all the guys that come through here know who you are. You know, in other words, if, you know, we come down here, we need a drummer. And people start calling off names, your name appears on everybody's list.
Oh, that's interesting.
I thought it was interesting. So somebody comes down looking for a drummer, you know, he said, okay, well, your name is on the list, but your name, you know, pops up.
Right.
And that made a lot of sense to me. So even before I decided to move to New York, a lot of the guys knew me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My name had appeared on the list. So when Betty started looking for a drummer, quite a few of the people she asked, my name came up. So, and I think she had asked a few people, and Benny Green being one, and Benny and I were playing together a lot. So I got the call to come in and audition, and that's how that happened.
Oh, wow. You know, that's a great point, though. I mean, you know, being in Chicago here, I mean, if you're one of those first call guys in Chicago, and then you decide to move to New York, I mean, all these guys coming through Chicago, you've already got a leg in, because it's not like you're just fresh and green and walking into the New York scene. You're already have relationships and you're connected. You know, taking that one step further now, so that was back, you know, 20, 30 years ago or so. I don't want to date people here. But nowadays with the internet, I mean, and you travel and you do tons of stuff. So, I mean, are you finding that it's easier to connect and find those players now because of social media and because of YouTube and Facebook and all that stuff? Or do you still feel like you got to still connect the way you connected back when you did that with people?
Well, I'm not a big social media. That's kind of, you know, after me, I tell people, I mean, you know, a lot of times I have to get my kids or somebody else to handle social media stuff. So I'm not a big social media person. I will jump on in. I will utilize YouTube and things, and you see mm-hmm. things, but it's still a lot of the players that I meet are just, you know, just from the tradition. I mean, you know, cause I do get myself involved and I run some jam sessions, here in the New York area. And so I will meet a lot of the young guys that are coming in or first getting here or coming out of school, and I meet players. And then, you know, certain players you hear, you say, oh, man, that guy's got something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or you hear guys playing, you know, and you connect and, you get names and numbers. And when an opportunity comes up, you know, then you call these people. You get a chance to play with them. But I still believe in, you know, in jam sessions and coming out, you know, to the gigs to meet and rub shoulders and hear guys. But I think that's an important tradition of this music. That's the way the music was passed on. And you learn so much more on the bandstand, because it's one thing sitting in school or sitting in the basement practicing, but it's another thing just taking it and being able to apply it
mm-hmm.
you know, on the bandstand.
Yeah, well, that's a great point, because, I mean, there's a lot of people that get out of school, a lot of kids, and there's nothing against going to school for jazz studies or any of that stuff, but when they get out, you know, they might be able to play, you know, killer Wayne Shorter tunes, but when you get up on a bandstand and nobody calls a Wayne Shorter tune, you better know some other tunes, you know. It's like, what's going on?
Everything's about balance.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Hey, so let's talk a little bit about how you got started, too, because I was reading up on you on your bio, and you were kind of into all sorts of music when you were in high school, it looked like. I mean, you were talking about Sousa marches, actually, on one of the bios I was reading. You enjoyed the snare drum stuff and all that. Did you play any other instruments other than just drum set and snare drum? Did you do mallet?
Coming through school, having to play, you know, marimbas and taking piano lessons. But I come from a musical family, because so my older brother was already playing. Then mm-hmm. I started playing. Then my younger brother, Philip, we had harpers with, and he started playing. So I was able to, you know, I had the opportunity of playing in nightclubs when I was 5 years old. I was playing with my older brother's band. So I was already, playing. When I would get to school, and they were just learning about reading and, you know, and then playing the marimbas, xylophone, playing in the concert band or the orchestra.
Mm-hmm. Did you end up going to college for music?
A little bit. Yeah, I did. I went to, I attended a couple of places. I went to Cincinnati Conservatory,
mm-hmm.
about half a year. And then from there, I think I went to Howard University for about a year. And then I went up to, with Jackie McLean up at the University of Hartford. And that lasted like maybe a semester before Dexter called. And then after Dexter called, that was that.
Yeah. Well, that's the one thing, too, and I want to get your pick your brain on this, too, just for a second, is that when it comes into the jazz studies realm, I think, you know, going to school and doing all that, but there's still, you don't need a degree to be a jazz musician. You need a degree to teach and to be a professor and all that. But if you get a call from Dexter Gordon, I would say that you probably just got a degree in jazz and you're good to go, right? I mean, and I think that that's one of those things that I think a lot of people don't realize these days is that when they go and get their jazz studies degree or something, it's really they can either play or they can't play. So what do you tell young students and what's your advice for younger players and people that are in school? I mean, what should their focus be on? Just learning tunes or what do you think?
Well, I tell them it should be on everything, especially business nowadays. If you have school and you can learn business, that's a great thing. And the world has changed so much, you know, with the advent, you know, like we're saying, social media, internet. There's so many other facets of things that haven't been tapped. That, let's say the younger generation, that they will start, you know, getting, because, you know, we might get to the point where, you know, everything just happens on, you know, social media, you know, they'd be hooked up with guys and just sit up and play a concert in their living room and, you know, and people pay into it, you know. So I have no idea where it goes. It's up to, you know, to their minds what they're able to create and do with it. But I have no problem with education. I think it's a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say there are times now, sometimes when I wished I had finished, and I think it may have allowed me to do, some other things, but at the same time, I know there's people sitting around who would say, wow, I wish I could have played with Dexter Gordon and,
right.
you know, Johnny Griffin and, you know, Clifford Jordan and Ray Bryant, you know. So, I felt like I took advantage of those opportunities for me. But then again, like I said, the world has changed so much, man. It's even in the last 10, 15 years.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's like in light speed, you know, every 1 or 2 years, something else is popping up and it's completely changing and everything. But, they will have a chance to see you live, though, here in Chicago. So that's the good news. So April 18th through the 21st, Wynard Harper, and it's a sextet, right? Wayne's got a quintet up there, but I think it's a sextet, isn't it?
You know, I don't even call it that no more. Usually I just say Wynard Harper and Jelly Posse.
Ah, okay.
Because I never know how many people are going to show up. Because like a lot of times my band now, I have a percussionist, I have a vocalist. And I carry, a lot of times I take a tap dancer, which, I'm hoping, one of my friends in Chicago there has been trying to get in touch with him, Trey. I'm hoping he'll show up and I can have that element as well, the tap dancer, because all of that is so important to me, to the music, because I like people seeing and knowing that jazz is a danceable
mm-hmm.
music. You can get up and dance to it, you know.
Talk a little bit about that then, with the tap dancing part of it and all that. I mean, back in the 20s and 30s and 40s, that was like standard. I mean, that would always happen in
right.
big ballrooms and things like that. So what's your concept on having all these different musicians and a tap dancer and a vocalist with you on these gigs?
Well, it's community, you know, it's the community and democracy. You know, you am able to show, have all these facets and everybody coming together to form one, you know, and then drummers and tap dancers, there's always been this mutual love and respect, you know,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of the drummers did tap dance. You know, I remember when I first went out on the road, my first time in Europe, and I was with Johnny Griffin. I remember we were on this festival and I'm standing in the green room waiting to go on, and Max Roach is standing there with me. And the Basie band was on playing. And they hit one of them grooves, man. And, you know, it was just a medium swing, and it was killing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm standing there next to Max, and he starts tap dancing. And I look like, wow. You know what I mean? You know, and he explained to me, he said, yeah, man, you know, the drummers and the tap dancers used to hang out, you know, play a lot of stuff. And then Roy Haynes has told me, you know, the same thing. So it's important, man. I get inspired by it. So, and you'll always find a great... And good musicians love being around other, you know, great talented musicians because it inspires you. You know, they give and take those conversations.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I've seen, you know, different tap dancers, but I it goes right back to like Sammy Davis when I used to, you know, there's a lot of stuff on him playing with brush players and things like that, and then he would play drums too. But I mean, the tap dancing element, really, when you're playing brushes, it's almost like the tap dancing thing too, I guess, when you bring it up, you know, the way that, that you swipe the hands and you swipe the feet and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot that relates to it. So that's pretty interesting. So you might actually have a tap dancer. You're going to have a vocalist. You're going to have your full band there at the Jazz Showcase. So I should make sure everybody knows. So the Jazz Showcase, if you don't know already, it's 806 South Plymouth Court right in Chicago. JazzShowcase.com is where the tickets are available. What's a good spot if the people can't make it to the showcase? Because obviously this doesn't just stay in Chicago. It's online, so it goes worldwide. Where else can they get more information on Wynard Harper? Online.
Well, you can always go to my Facebook page.
Okay.
You know, Wynard Harper Jazz. And I have a, you know, website up, and it's all kind of YouTube content. But, you know, we're bouncing around. But I have to say, man, I always like to tell people, you know, we're in a time now that not every city has a jazz club.
Mm-hmm.
So those that do, man, you really have to support and take care of it, because they're becoming far few in between, you know.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, we're lucky here in Chicago. We've got like three or four of them, and you go outside of Chicago about an hour or so, and there are none. So you are right.
Right.
You know, so everybody should get out. All right. So everybody should get out April 18th through the 21st at the Jazz Showcase. Wynard, it was a pleasure talking to you. I really appreciate you taking a few minutes here, and hopefully I will pop in and we'll meet in person. I'm looking forward to seeing your group next weekend.
Hey, man, I appreciate it. And then and along with that, too, tell everybody to support your show, man, because not every city has one of those.
Yeah, right?
You know, and I know that for sure.
That's right. I appreciate it so much, man. Have a good one, and thanks for being on Talkin' Jazz.
All right, thank you much. Peace and blessings.
Same to you.